I'm sorry, I'm going to leave any 30 in the middle. Sorry.
That's okay, you'll be. I'm going to hear it. Anyone who leaves in the middle is going to be marked absent. So I'm just telling you now.
I don't want to.
When I daven, if I'm successful at all, meaning if I'm thinking about what I'm saying, which doesn't always happen, should happen more often. But if I'm thinking the way I should be, so as I say, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, I'm not really thinking so much about Hashem. I'm thinking about Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Meaning, what I'm trying to do is to introduce myself again to Hashem by remembering that this is the God to whom Abraham related, with whom Abraham built a relationship, and whom Yitzchak did, and then whom Yaakov did. So I slow down there. And I try to think about the unique relationship that each one of them had with Hashem. And because that's just the way I think, I'm very drawn to the pshat relationship of Abraham with Hashem, and Yitzchak with Hashem, and Yaakov with Hashem, rather than the drash relationship. The drash relationship is often simpler. You know, like Avraham stands for Chesed, and Yitzchak stands for Gvura, and Yaakov stands for Emet, if you like. That's one version. Or, I don't know, all kinds of different, like there's never ending creativity in the world of Drash, so you could fill in lots of different blanks for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But if in the world of Pshat, so you have a much more specific set of parameters to deal with, and that is the actual stories that there are in the Chumash about Abraham and his relationship with Hashem, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and so on and so forth. Abraham is not such a challenge, because there are all these stories, and Abraham jumps off the pages as a dramatic figure, as a warrior for Hashem, as a warrior for his brother, and you know, he's not a subtle figure exactly. He's in three dimensions, you know, even on the two dimensions of the page. And Yaakov is a colorful figure also. So many stories about him, and so much detail, so much dialogue, so much depth, so much texture. Yitzchak is a mystery. Yitzchak is a mystery. And so I find myself again and again fascinated by the figure of Yitzchak. There are far fewer stories about Yitzchak, and especially he gets far less dialogue. And what is there is puzzling. Because the figure that is painted by what there is in the Torah is a strange figure. It's a figure which is a personality which describes a person who would be such an unusual person. If you actually met such a person and knew such a person, it would be hard to get to know such a person. A very inward, a very secret, a very mysterious kind of figure. So what are we supposed to think when we say Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak? Who is the Elokei Yitzchak? Meaning, who is Yitzchak, and what was his relationship with Hashem? So that's what I want to explore in this year. And you can see that there are kind of two parts here. On the first page, it says, like father, like son. And that continues for a while. And then on page three is finding his own way. And the reason why there are two parts of this is because my own thinking about Yitzchak continues to develop. I often mention, you know, in my own Tanakh classes, I don't write in my Tanakh just because, I mean, it's okay to write in the Tanakh, I just keep changing my mind. I keep learning, and I keep changing my mind. And so I keep changing my mind about Yitzchak also. My first thought about Yitzchak was like father, like son, and that also has to be explained. And more recently, I've been seeing more in Yitzchak, and that's finding his own way. So let's jump into it without more introduction. This week's parasha begins, Ve'ele toledot Yitzchak ben Abraham. Ele toledot means what? Yeah, this is the story of. Ele toledot doesn't mean these are the children of. Ele toledot doesn't mean these are the children of. I mean, the first Ele toledot in Bereishit is Ele toledot Hashemayim v'ha'aretz bihi bar'am. Right? B'yom asot Hashem alokim ha'aretz v'shamayim. So it doesn't mean these are the children of the... Right? It means this is the story of. We're going to focus on now. And throughout Sefer Bereishit, that's the way that Sefer Bereishit turns the page from a previous chapter to some kind of new chapter. You know, don't take my word for it. Look around Sefer Bereishit, search for all the Ele Toldot. Just one note, the word Toldot is often spelled without all the vavs, so that's how you'll find them. Just like here, it's spelled with only some of the vavs. Ele Toldot, Yitzchak ben Avraham. This is the story of Yitzchak ben Avraham. Until now, we haven't really focused on him. Now we're going to focus a bit on him. Avraham olid Yitzchak. Let's compare this for a second to another Ele Toldot. Ele Toldot Noach. Next words. Noach ish tzadik, tamim haya b'dorotav, eta elokim italach Noach. So it doesn't tell us about Noach's children, but at least it tells us about Noach. It tells us that Noach was this great guy, and Hashem loved him, and he was the best. He walked with Hashem. And then, Vayelod Noach shloshav anim et shem et cham et yafet. So after all, it does tell us the Toldot Noach. And here, it's telling us who Yitzchak is, and what it says is, this is the story of Yitzchak, ben Avraham. So you kind of know who his dad was already, right? And then it says, Avraham will lead Yitzchak. And it just slaps you in the face. It's just such an enigma. It's such a strange pasuk. It begs for drash. It begs for greater plumbing, for greater depth, greater analysis. One of the ways of looking at this is to say that actually, just like Noach has his character completely described by Ish Tzadik, Tamim Haya B'Dorotav, Et Elokim Italach Noach, Yitzchak has his character completely described by the phrase Avraham Hulida Yitzchak. That actually does encapsulate Yitzchak. That tells us who he was. He was the son of Avraham. Not just in biological fact, but in terms of his identity, that really subsumes, that really encompasses his entire identity, is the fact that he's Abraham's son. Look at what the Midrash says. It's one of those cases in which I think the Midrash really does reflect Pshat. Reshit Rabbah says, Avram Nikra Avram. Avram started life named Avram, and then was renamed Avraham, as we all know. Yitzchak Nikra Avraham. And now a surprise. Yitzchak also was named Avraham. Where do we find that? Yitzchak Nikra Avraham. Yitzchak is called Avraham. Dichtiv, as it says, quotes the beginning of our parasha, Ve'ela Toledot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham. This is the story of Yitzchak, son of Avraham, Avraham. Now, it's classic drash. What makes this classic drash? I just did something patently unfair. It seems even absurd. What just happened to the pasuk? Yeah, they just truncated the end of the pasuk and denied the obvious, plain meaning of the pasuk. What do you mean, Avraham? It's not Avraham. It's Avraham Olida Yitzchak, right? But that's what drash does. Drash says, I can stop the pasuk or the phrase anywhere I want to make a point. So what point is the Midrash making? The point is he doesn't even have his own name. And that actually is the point that was made by the pasuk. The pasuk says, who is Yitzchak ben Avraham? Avraham Oli Yitzchak, that's who he was. So the Midrash just takes it a step further and says, he didn't even really have his own name. He was called Yitzchak, but he was really called Avraham. Meaning, he doesn't have his own identity. To have your own name means to have your own identity, to stand on your own. But he stands totally in the shadow of his father. Look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Chet. Gemara says, Lama Nivra Adam Yechidi, why was man created single? Right, Hashem could have created lots of people, or could have created at least two, but it seems at first that Hashem created one. Right, and here we're channeling Bereshit Perek Bet instead of Bereshit Perek Aleph. Bereshit Perek Bet, so Adam is created alone, and in fact is lonely, and then Hashem creates the Isha afterwards. In Bereshit Perek Aleph, they seem to be created at the same time. Anyway, Lama Nivra Adam Yechidi, why is man created alone? Lahagid Gidulato, Shal Melech Machay Amalachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to tell you how great Hashem is. A person stamps several coins with one mold, with one stamp. Vikulan domin zelze. You take a bunch of pieces of raw soft metal and you stamp them with the same stamp, and the coins turn out identical. All the coins turn out exactly the same. You know, if you're carrying any change, if you look at all the dimes in your pocket or all the quarters in your pocket, etc., etc., probably they look very much the same, or at least when they were brand new, they were all the same exactly. Hashem stamps every person with the stamp of Adam. And yet, every single one is different. Every single one is unique. We're all stamped with that stamp. That's the prototype for all human beings. And yet, because of those 46 chromosomes, everyone is different. Everyone is different. Right? So this is the Gemara talking about how everyone has his or her own characteristics. You look at people, just like you look at the coins, and you see they're all the same, they're all identical. You look at Hashem's children, you look at Hashem's coins, so to speak, and we're all different. Just look around the room, right? We're all children of Adam, and no one here looks alike. Except in the next Midrash. The next Midrash talks about Yitzchak and Abraham. Tziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'malach ha-memuneh al tzorat havad. Hashem commanded the angel who is in charge of forming embryos, who's in charge of giving them a specific form. What is this angel that's in charge of the form of the embryo? Who is that angel? Depends who you are, right? If you're more mystically inclined, you would say that it's some kind of mystical being with a name like Gabriel or Michael or whatever it is. If you're the Rambam, you would say that angel is called deoxyribonucleic acid. That's what the Rambam says about this. Anyway, so Hashem changed the DNA. Hashem commanded the Malach. The Malach just means whatever mechanism Hashem uses to get his will done. And in the case of phenotypes, in the case of how people look, so that's DNA. Amar lo, Hashem said to the angel, Al tatsur oto dome le'imo elo la'aviv. Do not form Yitzchak, this embryo, in the likeness of his mother, but only in the likeness of his father. Most children bear some resemblance to both parents. But Yitzchak is an exception, except Yitzchak is supposed to look only like his father, and exactly like his father, and not at all like his mother. Miyad yatza dome le'aviv. So he came out, the spitting image of his father. L'kach ne'amar, that's why it says, Ela todo Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham oli Yitzchak. Avraham alone bore Yitzchak. Avraham alone contributed genetic material to Yitzchak, and Sarah's contribution was somehow erased. Now, this has to be explained. Why would Hashem say something like that? Why would Hashem do something like that? So there are different explanations. One explanation is, have you heard any explanations? Why was it important for Yitzchak to look quite like Avraham? Mm-hmm. Yeah, people were raising questions about whether Abraham was the father. Why would people raise questions like that? Yeah, do you remember it's like funny history. Yeah, she spent some time with Avimelech. And then, you know, Hashem came to Avimelech and said, Avimelech, I'm going to kill you. You're going to die. Because this woman, you know, and Avimelech had not approached her, it says in the Pasuk. Hashem had prevented him, but not all the jokers of the generation necessarily knew that. So maybe people were snickering and slandering and stuff like that, right? Now, this doesn't make very good sense. It doesn't make very good sense that people would say things like that. Why does that not make good sense in the context of this story?
Because we're talking about a Yitzchak's life. Like, why is that relevant here?
Well, you want to make it clear who the paternity is. In other words, you want to make it clear to all the jokers of the generation. That's true. But the point is, later, people were making jokes about this, and people were, you know, raising questions. So Hashem just wanted to settle the whole thing, right? If you think about it, though, there isn't really so much room for jokes. Like, I mean, there's always room for dumb jokes, and always room for people to be unkind and to be snide. But the truth is that Avraham has already shown that he knows how to have a child, right? It's pretty clear that the problem in the relationship isn't Avraham, because Avraham is a child, and that child is Ishmael, right? So if Sarah spends time with someone else and ends up with a child, then it would be funny to say, clearly Avraham has been the problem the whole time, and now Avimelech supplied what Avraham could not supply, so it's Avimelech's child. So there's got to be some other reason why Hashem commanded that Yitzchak look like Avraham. Yeah?
Maybe it's to show Avraham that he's the one who's really continuing the
breed. Very nice, right? Avraham had lots of doubts about whether Yitzchak should be his successor or Ishmael should be his successor. So this is Hashem saying, I'm really telling you this is the one, right? I'm really telling you this is the one. Now, of course, if Avraham were really upset and really stuck to his guns about it, he would say, you pulled a nasty trick making this one look just like me. I still like Ishmael, no matter what he looks like, right? I know you did this, right? That was dirty one. That was a low blow. That's what I would say if I were Avraham and I was still angry. But the other thing that happens when Yitzchak has Avraham's face is exactly what happens when Yitzchak is Avraham's name. Sometimes when you have someone else's face, so you look like that person, and everyone knows that you're not that person, but you look like that person, and that's the thinking along which everyone here is going. But the other thing that's going on is that you don't have your own face. The same way, if you're called by the same name as your dad, you don't have your own name. And so, to some extent, the Midrash is telling us that that is Yitzchak. He doesn't have his own name. He doesn't even have his own features. And again, it's dramatically telling us that he stands in the shadow of his father. In what way does he stand in the shadow of his father? So, if you just look at the events of his life, a lot of the events of his life seem eerily reminiscent of those of the events of his father's life. Look at the, if you look at the sets of text down at the bottom with the arrows in the middle there, those block arrows, Bereshit Perek Yudalef says, Vatihi Sarai Akara, Ein Lavalad. Sarai was an Akara. I don't like using the term barren. Sometimes people translate Akara barren, but I think it's not as sensitive as could be to say barren, because in any audience that you're talking to, or any group of people that you're talking to, there are going to be people who are going to have trouble having children. Who wants to be described as barren? God forbid, right? To say that someone has difficulty having children is one thing, and that's hard enough, but I would never say barren, right? But Sarai Akara, Sarah did not have children. Ein Lavalad, she would not have children. And the same thing happens to Yitzchak. Later, the same thing is going to happen to Yaakov with one of his wives. Generation later, that happens to Yitzchak. And the truth is that, you know, I'm not so surprised. I'm a little surprised that it happens to Yaakov, because he's not the spitting image of anyone before him. He is his own man. But with Yitzchak, it's not surprising to me that the same challenges that he encounters were those his father encountered. Reshit Perek Yud Bet, Vayira Av Baretz, Avraham encounters, as soon as he gets to Eretz Canaan, encounters a famine. Vayira Avraham Mitzrayim Lagorsham, he goes down to Mitzrayim Lagorsham, meaning what? What's Lagor? In modern Hebrew, it means Lagor. It means to live there, right? Where do you gar? Where do you live, right? But that's modern Hebrew. In biblical Hebrew, what's Lagor? Lashavet is to live permanently. What's Lagor? To be a ger there, right? To sojourn, as they would say in the old-fashioned Haggadahs. That he went down there to hang around there for a little while. Ki chaved ha-ra'av b'aretz, because the famine was so heavy, it was so difficult to survive in Eretz Canaan. He was not planning to move to Eretz Mitzrayim, but he was there for a while. And so the same thing happens in the life of Yitzchak. Look at Bereshit Perek Chavah. V'hi ra'av b'aretz milvad ha-ra'av ha-rishon asher haya b'mei Avraham. There was a famine in the world, in the land, I should say, besides the first famine that there was in the day of Avraham. And here's the Torah cluing us in. Here is an event happening again in the life of Yitzchak that first happened in the life of Abraham. So the Torah is making the connection explicit. Vayirai lev Hashem vayomer al tired Mitzrayim. Hashem appears to him and says, "Don't go down to Egypt," which actually just emphasizes the parallel between him and Abraham. His natural reaction is to react the same way his father did, and he's only restrained by Hashem saying, "Do not follow the pattern of your father." Reshit Perek Yud Zayin. Hashem says to Abraham, "V'natati l'cha l'zarecha acharecha te'eretz migurecha, I will give to you and your children after you the land in which you have wandered, Eretz Canaan, et kol Eretz Canaan, la'achuzat olam, as an everlasting possession." Achuza is something you hold on to forever. Hashem says something very similar to Yitzchak in Perek Chavav, with a crucial difference. With a crucial difference. Ki l'cha l'zarecha etein et kol ha'aretz ote'el, to you and your children after you, so far it's the same thing, I will give all of these lands, El is short for Ele, and I will keep the promise that I promised, not to you, Avraham Avicha, to Avraham your father. What about the promise that he promised to Yitzchak? So the answer is he never promises anything to Yitzchak. Yitzchak never gets a bracha from Avraham. Yitzchak gives his own children brachot. He tries to give a bracha to Esav, ends up giving it to Yaakov, later gives a sort of watered-down bracha to Esav. But there's no scene in which Abraham gives a bracha to Yitzchak. He's just the natural continuation of Abraham. It's almost like he doesn't need to be blessed, because not only is he the only man standing because Ishmael has been ejected from the household, but he's almost not a different man than Abraham, and so doesn't need to be blessed. So Hashem says, I'm going to keep the promise that I made to Abraham, your father. Look at the second page, Bereshit Perek Chaf Beh. Hashem says, to Abraham at the Akedah, Beit Baruchu v'zarecha kol gei haaretz, through your children, all of the world will be blessed. Ekev asher shamata b'koli, because you obeyed me. Because you obeyed me. And you passed this final test by being willing to sacrifice the thing most precious to you, your son, your last son, your only one. And so you're going to be the source of blessing for the whole world, Hashem says to Abraham. It's like the crowning achievement, the high point of Abraham's life. And from then on, he pretty much recedes into the background. Here's Hashem saying the same thing to Yitzchak. V'yitzbarachu b'zarecha kol gayei haaretz. Your children will be the source of blessing for all of the nations of the world, not because you're so great. Ekev asher shama Avraham bekuli. Imagine Hashem came to you and said that you were going to get great, great stuff because your mom was super excellent and Hashem really, really loved her and she was the best. After a while of hearing that, you probably would get tired of hearing that. You're like, yeah, she was the best. And you might sort of say, well, how about me? Is there a me? What does Yitzchak think when he hears this? What does Yitzchak think? Yeah.
Isn't that the whole point?
Like, I think that's the whole point.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think that the whole point is that, if you're, similar to the same person your whole life, then, it's more of a drive to keep doing and doing more so that you can have your own way that people can recognize you. Like, it's a drive to do good things so that you're no longer going to be like, oh, you're just like your father. Be like, oh, you're so similar to your father, but you also did.
Yeah, except Hashem never gets to that point with him. Hashem never says, good job, Yitzchak. You've really done well, just like your father. He just gives us the because of your father part. So Hashem also doesn't seem to see Yitzchak. He seems to be nostalgically reaching back for Abraham every time he talks to Yitzchak. He's like, I really, really liked your dad. Your dad was so excellent. Too bad he's not around. Otherwise, I would just give all these things to him. But, you know, he was great. And so I'm going to keep all the promises that I swore to him, you know? It's got to start affecting you at some point. It's got to start undercutting your confidence, and it's got to start being insulting at some point. Like, imagine that you came to a seminary or something like that, and your sister had been at the same seminary before you, and all the teachers keep slipping and calling you by your older sister's name. And, like, let's say she was a star or something like that, right? And she was the best ever. And teachers keep making references to that, you know, and you feel like you don't really live up to it or whatever. And people just keep putting it in your face. At a certain point, you're just going to lose your mind. You want to shout at those people and say, hello, don't you see me? There's me. Forget everybody else. Forget my father and all that sort of stuff. What about Yitzchak? Who's Elokei Yitzchak? Forget about Elokei Abraham. I know you're Elokei Abraham. Yeah. Yeah, and it's that rare psychology that I want to talk about. Because I think Yitzchak teaches us something there. And I think we can access it. And the question is, exactly how did Yitzchak get there? How did he so thoroughly buy into this? So thoroughly that when Hashem said these things to him, it was confirmation of who he had decided to be, rather than a slap in the face. For most of us, you know, growing up as card-carrying members of Western society, we firmly believe that each one of us has some kind of divine mission, and there's something unique about me. What's my mission in the world? And if someone were to come to you and tell you that your mission in the world is to basically, I don't know, be as good as somebody else or keep going the way someone else did, you would sort of be let down. And somehow, Yitzchak comes from a different place, and that's what I want to talk about a little bit. Look at Bereishit Perek Chavav. Vayashov Yitzchak. Yitzchak went back. Vayachpor be'irot ha'mayim asher chafru b'mi Avraham aviv. He dug the wells that they had dug in the days of Avraham, his father. Vayisatamum plishtim acharei mot Avraham. And the plishtim had stopped up all those wells after the death of Avraham. Vayikra lahen shimot. So Yitzchak redug those wells. And then he called them names. Kashemot asher kara lahen aviv. He called them the same names that his father called them. Right? So the man doesn't dig his own wells. He redigs his father's wells, and he doesn't even get to call them by his own names. Calling names is like an act of creation. In Perek Aleph of Bereishit, Hashem invents things, Hashem creates things, and then calls them by names. In Perek Bet, Hashem makes things, and Adam gets to call them names. And that's a signal of Adam's partnership with Hashem in the creative act, right? Hashem brings him an animal, and Adam says what it is. And then Hashem brings a woman, and he names it Isha, etc., etc. And Hashem accepts those names. So here, Yitzchak has the opportunity to do something. He does exactly what his father did, and he gives them exactly the same names as his father. In Bereishit Perek Chavav also, a little later, it says, Vayira Elav Hashem by Laila Hu, Vayomer. Hashem appeared to him that night and said, Anochi Elokei Avraham Avicha. I am the God of Abraham, your father, Hashem says to him. Not I am, you are God. I'm the God of your father. Al tiraki et chanochi. Do not be afraid, I'm with you. Uverachticha veharbeiti et zaracha. I will bless you and increase your children. Ba'avur Abraham avdi. Because of Abraham, my servant. I was a big, big fan of your dad. Have I mentioned that before? I really liked your dad. In Bereshit Perek Chaf Aleph versus Chaf Vav, you see another parallel happening. Both Abraham and Yitzchak have an encounter with Avimelech and his general named Fichol. They come to Abraham and they say, Avimelech is the king of the kingdom of Gerar. Kingdom is maybe an exaggeration. In this time, there's no country of Canaan. There are just lots of disconnected cities. And each city has its own mayor, which Tanakh calls a king. Right? So it's almost like the king of Athens and the king of Sparta. It's not an empire, it's just a city. So Avimelech is the mayor, is the king of Gerar, and Fichol is his general, meaning the head of his gang of thugs. So they come to Avraham and they say, Elokim imcha b'chol asher ato oseh, Hashem seems to be with you in whatever you do. We want to make a brit with you, we want to make a treaty with you, since you seem to be so favored by Hashem. In Bereshit Perek Chavav, the next generation, exactly the same thing happens to Yitzchak. Avimelech halach elav migrar, Avimelech journeyed to Yitzchak from Gerar, ufichol asar tzva'o, and also this guy Fichol, vayamru, ra'o ra'inu ki aya Hashem imach, we saw that Hashem was with you, vanomer, and we said, tehina Allah benotenu beinenu beinecha, let there be an oath between us, v'nechbarta brit imach, let's make a brit with you. So exactly the same stuff happens to Yitzchak, as happens to Abraham. Where does this all come from? Abraham was I almost called Yitzchak Abraham. Is Yitzchak born this way? Sometimes this happens to the children of famous people. They're just so overshadowed by someone great that they never come into their own. Maybe it's a little bit of an escape. Maybe it's a little bit of letting oneself off the hook. You don't even have to try to be great because there's no way to get out from under the shadow of that great person. So you just decide to live in the shadow and it's easier. I think that's possible. Yeah.
Kind of sounds like it could be that happened first, that he was kind of put in that situation. But it sounds like when he has the opportunity, he enjoys it and he like
what
he,
opportunity?
Like the whole undigging the wells, and he calls it that. Like it's kind of like everything else was kind of like God said, "Oh, your father." It was like very passive. However, that's like the first time in what we've seen so far that like he takes control and where he's active upon it and says, I am the son of Abraham. I can do just like that.
So but what's so interesting is that this is his chance to distinguish himself, and he totally ducks the opportunity. He doesn't dig his own wells. He digs the same wells his father dug, and this is his chance at least to call them by his own names, and he doesn't do it. He calls them by the same. So he actively, like you said, actively embraces being merely a continuation of his father and his father's shadow.
And
so it's not just Hashem imposing it on him here. Here he is accepting that role.
Right, but also I would add to that, because it could have been that beforehand, it's like, now why would he think that he has that opportunity? Mm-hmm. But I find that with anyone, as you grow up, it's kind of like your parents are imposed upon you, and then when it comes to a point, like, I don't think that that's late in his life to be deciding that I am my father's son. Mm-hmm. I think that would be an appropriate time, because I feel that almost all of us have that opportunity to like now in our lives say like I am my father's child or my mother's child. So I think that really this is like the right opportunity that he took to say that.
You know, when you really get to see whether you are a parent's children or not, when you're a parent, when you notice yourself saying and doing the same things that your parents did, or at least that's your go-to reaction. You may decide to do something else, but that's your first tendency. Then you'll realize that those patterns are etched deeper than you might have thought. And then you have to make that choice, whether you want to be your parents' children or whether you want to find a different path. Yeah.
So I don't think we can take this one act of him re-digging the same wells and naming them the same things as a sign of he kind of accepted his role as Abraham's son and that is it. I think up until then, he was conditioned to only believe that. So he didn't really have, there was no other thought process. He didn't know how to do anything else.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not saying that I'm not blaming him. I'm not saying that, you know, he should have done something else. And maybe it's true that that's how Hashem brought him up. But then you're sort of wondering, okay, then who is Elokei Yitzchak? We should just say Elokei Avraham and Elokei Yaakov, and that's it. And like, being an Av should skip a generation, because all Yitzchak did was sort of like re-dig his father's wells, and that's it. There's no independent relationship or greatness of Yitzchak. It just sort of like continues from the previous generation, you know, and there's nothing unique about it. We can understand, maybe he's been raised to that, but is that what it is? That's the question.
No, I was just saying that we just, it can't be assumed that he was happy about it, but maybe there is something that is great just about emulating someone if the person that you're emulating is Avraham.
Yeah, I do want to go in that generation, in that direction, and I also want to try to speculate about how Yitzchak got there. Yeah.
I was just gonna say that, like, it is really important to be like the person to continue setting foundations, which obviously that's what Yitzchak seems to be doing, just setting the foundations in stone. But unless you also have something new to contribute in your own little way, then you might as well just say, okay, Avraham. So, does that make sense?
It sure does, right? But since we say Elokei Yitzchak, I'm convinced that there must be something
right.
there. You
that's
know,
what I'm
we're
saying.
Not just including him there so he won't feel bad.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, where's that greatness? Where's that unique relationship with Hashem that we can find? I think it's there. I think you just have to look harder for it. Yeah.
I think there are some distinctions between the way Abraham and Yitzchak deal with some situations. Yes, they may deal with this very, very, very similar situations, but some of the differences are really important. Like, when Avraham and Lot have a disagreement about what to do with the land, they part ways, whereas Yitzchak tries to actually work with other people who are filling in the well. So that's a really important distinction. Avraham and Lot just splits, Yitzchak tries to work with them.
That's interesting.
Or like when dealing with...
That's going to be in the section called Finding His Own Way. So I'm with you there. Yeah.
Okay. Or like the other point about Rivka being in a karah, Yitzchak and Avraham deal with the infertility in really different ways. Like,
that's there too. Yeah. We're thinking along the same lines here. In other words, there is a real layer of Yitzchak's identity which really is very similar to that of his father. And then there's a whole nother dimension. So I want to get to that afterwards. I think you're so right. And that's what I only realized later. It took me longer to realize that. But first I want to just understand, or try to understand, try to guess at where Yitzchak became this person, assuming he wasn't born as this person. And I think it's in Bereishit Perek Chafbet here. Chafbet Vav. Vayikach Avraham et Atzei Ha'ula, Vayasem al Yitzchak Beno. Avraham takes the wood for the sacrifice and puts them on Yitzchak his son. Vayelchu shnehem yachtav, and they went together. And the togetherness, I think, is meant as an ironic counterpoint to what's really happening. They are together physically, but they could not be further apart emotionally. Yitzchak walking to the Akedah, it's reasonable to assume, trusting in his father, perhaps wondering where is the animal that we're going to sacrifice, but never imagining what is about to happen. And Avraham's heart pounding as he drags himself step by step closer to the murder of his son at his own hand. So they're together, at the same time they're worlds apart. Vayom Yitzchak el Avraham, Aviv. Yitzchak says to Avraham, his father. And here's the Torah emphasizing the relationship between them at this moment, where that relationship is the thing that makes this so difficult for Avraham. Vayomer Avi, and he said, Father. Vayomer Hineni Bini. And Avraham says, here I am. Not just here I am, distancing himself, but here I am, my son. And so Yitzchak asks him the famous question. You know, I'm just a little confused about the technicalities here. Here we have the wood, and here is the fire and the knife. We brought everything, but we seem to have forgotten the sacrifice. So Avraham says to him, Pasuk Ket, Vayom Avraham Elokim Yir Elo Haseh Le'ola B'ni. Hashem will choose to say, my son. Vayachush Nehem Yachtav, and there's that ironic togetherness again, counterpointing what's really going on inside them. Two people could not be walking more together physically and less together emotionally.
Vayarokh et ha'itzim. Abraham sets up the wood. And at this point, it's time for the secret to come out. At this point, it's time for Yitzchak to find out where this is. Vayakod et Yitzchak beno. And he ties up his son. Vayasam oto al mizbeach. And he puts him on the altar. Vayikach et ha'machel et l'shchot et beno. And he takes the knife to slaughter his son. Do you know that this is the only conversation in the Torah between Abraham and Yitzchak? They never have any other conversation before this, and they never have any other conversation afterwards. Their only conversation, their only communication, is this one. And I think what the Torah is telling us, I'm sure they talked at other times, but the Torah never reports any other conversation. And I think what the Torah is hinting to us is, this is the moment at which Abraham passed down to Yitzchak everything that he was going to pass down to Yitzchak. This moment, this conversation encapsulated, is Abraham passing down to Yitzchak his role. Imagine yourself in this role. You go up to a mountain with your dad, your iconoclastic, sometimes a little bit, out of step with the neighbors. Like, they all want to worship idols and he all wants to play baseball with them, smash them. And, maybe he's thrown into a fiery furnace and maybe he's not. But he moves the family from one part of the world to another because of his visions. And you believe it. You're willing to go for it because it's your dad, If anyone makes fun of him, you're going to be upset. And then things turn strange and quickly terrifying. Because your dad, who loves you and whom you love, takes you and basically handcuffs you and ties you facing the sky to an altar. And you realize, as he approaches you with the knife, that he's going to kill you for his God. So Avraham leaves the Akedah filled with relief. How did Yitzchak leave the Akedah? Makes for some awkward father-son moments later on. How do you talk to your father after an event like this? They never do talk again. So imagine yourself in this situation. I think most of us would come away saying, not for me. That man is not for me. His God is not for me. His religion is not for me. It's all very well and good, to preach the faith and to spread monotheism, whatever it is. But he almost just cut my head off because of his visions, because of his commands. Whatever it is, I almost became a casualty, a lethal casualty of his service to his God. So, no thank you. He's not for me and his God is not for me. That would have been a reasonable reaction. And apparently that's not Yitzchak's reaction. Yitzchak goes in the other direction entirely. Yitzchak says, yes, I believe that Hashem wanted my father to do this. And not only did Hashem want him to do it, but Hashem wanted me to accept it. So my father's role was to do the sacrificing, and my role was to accept being sacrificed. And he fully accepts that role. He comes away from the Akedah, instead of pushing away and rejecting and panicking, as most of us would probably do, and instead says, I understand that that's my role in life, is to sacrifice myself to my father's religious mission. Avraham does not sacrifice his son that day. But Yitzchak does sacrifice himself that day, because for the rest of his life, that's what he does, is he simply sacrifices himself to his father's religious mission. And in a sense, Abraham comes home from the Akedah with Hashem's reprieve, with Hashem's Al Tishlach Yadcha El Hanar, the Al Taslo Me'uma, but Yitzchak never comes back. Yitzchak remains bound to the Akedah, a sacrifice of his father to Hashem forever. He sees that that's the role that he's meant to play, and that's the role he plays. It's a role of incredible heroism. not the heroism of sacrificing someone else, which, after all, is the most difficult test someone could face, but on the other hand, is the stroke of a knife and it's over. Yitzhak has to remain alive and yet sacrifice himself every single day. Imagine sacrificing yourself afresh every single day. That's what Yitzhak does. Avraham gives us the ability to sacrifice things. And Yitzhak gives us the ability to sacrifice ourselves. How many Jews have displayed that capability? Not to sacrifice others, not to sacrifice other things that are most precious to ourselves, but to sacrifice our very selves. Throughout Jewish history, that is what has kept us going. If you look at afterwards in the Akedah, where it says, Bereshit Perek Chaf Bet, Vayom HaShlishi Vayisav Raham Et Einav Vayar Kamakol Merachok. As they were approaching the mountain, so on the third day of traveling, Avraham saw the place from far away. Vayomer Avraham El Na'arav, so he says to his servants, Shivu Lachem Poem Echamor, you guys stay here with the car. V'ani V'anar Ne'achad Ko. I and the young man Yitzhak, we will go over there, to Har Moriah. We will worship and we will come back. Right, so Avraham, of course, has to hide from them what's going to happen, same way he has to hide it from Yitzhak. He doesn't expect to come back with Yitzhak. But of course he does. Pasuk Yud-Tet is after the Akedah. Vayashov Avraham al Na'arav. Avraham comes back to the servants. Vayakumu vayalchu yachdav el Be'er Sheva. They got up and they went home together to Be'er Sheva. And they lived happily ever after. Who's not in the Pasuk? Who never left the Akedah? I'm sure that the actual literal Yitzhak came home from the Akedah. Right? He didn't stay there forever. Avraham didn't leave him tied there. But in the most fundamental sense, he never left. He remains bound to the Akedah forever. He understands that that's his mission. Perkei Rabbi Eliezer says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Esrim Shana Hayta Rivka Akara. For 20 years, Rivka was childless. After 20 years, he took her to Har Moriah, to the place where he was bound. And he davened for children, and there Hashem responded to him. Why did he take his wife to the place of the Akedah? How come he took her there? The simple explanation would be like the kind of thing that we say on Rosh Hashanah. Va'akedat Yitzchak hayom berachamim tizkor. Remember in the merit of the Akedah, that was a really great sacrifice, that was really big. You know, please count that in our favor. But I think on a deeper level, what it's telling us is that that's the place where Yitzchak feels closest to Hashem. That's the place where he feels most himself. He takes her there because that's the place which inspires him to think of his mission in life, and his mission in life is sacrificing himself to Hashem. On the next page, the Midrash Tanchuma, this is the source for the famous thing that we always say, why Yitzchak was instructed not to leave Eretz Canaan when there was a famine. Avraham left, after all, so why is Yitzchak instructed not to leave? Vayelach Yitzchak al Avimelech. Yitzchak goes to Avimelech, to the kingdom of Gerar, instead of going to Mitzrayim, where food is more plentiful. The Midrash says that Yitzchak actually sought to go down to Mitzrayim. Miyad nigla alav HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem appeared to him immediately. Amar lo, Hashem said to him, Al tered Mitzrayim, don't go down to Mitzrayim. V'lama lo amar lo Avraham, el li Yitzchak, al tered Mitzrayim. So how come Hashem never appeared to Avraham and said, Avraham, don't go to Mitzrayim? Amar Rabbi Hoshaya, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yitzchak, so Hashem said to Yitzchak, Yitzchak, avicha sheba michutz al haaretz, yered li Mitzrayim. Your father who came from Chutz La'aretz, he can go back to Chutz La'aretz. You were born in Eretz Yisrael. And you are an Ola Tahora. You are a pure sacrifice. Tered? How could you leave? The halacha is that Koche Kochim can't leave the Beit HaMikdash. Once they leave the Beit HaMikdash, they're Pasul. They're Pasul. And so Yitzchak, by the same token, is in the Beit HaMikdash. He's in the holy precinct, and he is a Korban. What do you mean he's a korban? One day in his life, this happened to him. It was a long time ago. Now there's a famine. But the answer is that that status never evaporates from Yitzchak. Yitzchak remains the Olah Tohorah forever. Not because that was like an important event in his life and that's it, but because that is his mode of worshiping Hashem, his mode of relating to his father for the rest of his life.
Here's the Midrash Agadah. Midrash says, Shchon ba'aretz asher amari lechem. When Hashem says to Yitzchak, don't go down to Mitzrayim because of the famine. Instead, stay in the land. So he says, Shchon ba'aretz asher amari lecha. Stay in the land that I will tell you. I'm going to tell you some land to stay in. It's a strange way of saying it. What do you mean stay in the land I tell you? You could say Shchon ba'aretz, you know, ba'aretz, that's it. Or ba'aretz Canaan or something. So the Midrash explains, B'zchut Avraham, sha'amarti lo, in the merit of Avraham, you should say there, sha'amarti lo, I said to him, al achad heharim asher omari lecha. What does it mean, shchon ba'aretz asher omari lecha, stay in the land, asher omari lecha? In the merit of Avraham, to whom I said, sacrifice him on one of the mountains, asher omari lecha. One of the mountains I'm going to point out to you later. So the Midrash is saying that when it says, when Hashem says to Yitzchak, stay in the land, asher omari lecha, connecting it to the mountain, asher omari lecha, Hashem is saying to him, stay in that land. What land? The same land, the same place as I pointed out to Abraham. You need to stay in the land of that mountain. That's where you are at home. If you look at the Pesukim, so Hashem says to Abraham, v'ha'ale usham va'ola al achad he'arim asher omari lecha. And then it says, v'yakom v'yelcha l'makom asher amar lo ha'elokim. And Hashem puts him on the and Avram puts him on the mizbeach, and then now in our pasuk when Yitzchak is facing a famine, it's the exact same phrase. Hashem is saying to him, you need to stay in the land of Asher Omar Elecha. The land of Asher Omar Elecha is the place of the Akedah. It's not just that you need to stay in that geographic area for some extraneous reason. That's who you are. That's who you are. Stay in that place. The Midrash HaBi'ur. Another Midrash Agadah. It's just a fascinating kind of reflection. The Midrash says, "Vahilo mikneh etzon." The Yitzchak was rich. He had all kinds of cattle. "Vahilo ayu lo gmalim v'chamorim." How come it just says he had mikneh etzon? With the other avot, it says that they had gmalim and chamorim, you know, camels and donkeys. Kimoshen emar b'Avraham v'Yaakov. He must have had that too. So how come it doesn't say so? Ela shalom hichnis l'rishuto davar sheish bo siman tuma. Yitzchak actually did not own those things, the Midrash says. Why not? Because they're not kosher. Those are not kosher animals. Because he had been sanctified on top of the Mizbeach. What is that supposed to mean? I don't take this literally. I don't think it means that Yitzchak actually had no camels and no donkeys. But the point is, the moment that's burned into Yitzchak's mind is the single signal moment of his life that from which he judges everything else, which forms his values forever. Even such trivialities as what animals he'll own later is that moment. I think the Midrash is hinting that that's the moment of Yitzchak's greatest clarity. And this Midrash, the next Midrash is a beautiful Midrash, we all know. And I just want to give a new interpretation to it, which perhaps is obvious to you, but only occurred to me later. The Midrash says, based on the Pasuk, that when Yitzchak got old, so his eyes dimmed, he couldn't see anymore. How do we know Yitzchak couldn't see? Yaakov was able to impersonate Esav. Vayikei zaken Yitzchak vatichena einav mirot. So his eyes dimmed and he could not see. Vayikra et Esav beno agadol vayomer elav bani vayomer elav hineni. Calls Esav and he says, son, he says, yeah. Vayomer hineni azakanti lo yadati yom moti. He says, I am old. I don't know the day of my death. Raise your hand if you know the day of your death. What a thing to say. I don't know the day of my death. Now, the truth is, if you're old and you're expecting death to come any second, then it makes a little bit more sense to say, I don't know the day of my death. Not only do you know, do you mean, I don't know the day of my death, but you also mean, it's coming. It's coming. It's one of these days. I don't know which day, but it's coming. But actually, Yitzchak is not going to die anytime soon. He's not going to die anytime soon. How do we know? Yitzchak is about to give a bracha to Esav, who he thinks is Esav. He gives it to Yaakov, and then Yaakov has to run for his life. How long is Yaakov away for? 20, 22 years, something like that. So this man who thinks he's on his deathbed, any day now I'm going to just pop off. He's going to live for over 2 decades. However, the single most clear moment in Yitzchak's life was when he lay on the Akedah, watching his father poised with a knife above him. And Yitzchak's life is lived in every second with the potential of impending death. Lo yadati yom moti could almost be his motto. I'm not saying that he's traumatized by it, but the point is he's ready at any moment for his life to end. he's taking care of things because he's ready to lay down his life, was ready to lay it down to further his father's mission, and remains ready. And I think that's why he expects death to be coming. So the Midrash says so beautifully, Rashi quotes the Midrash, Vatichena, his eyes dimmed, Kishineakar agabeh ha-mizbeach, when he was tied on the mizbeach, V'haya aviv rotzeh v'shochto, his father was going to slaughter him, Be'ota sha'a niftechu ha-shamayim, at that moment the heavens opened. And you imagine Yitzchak, what is Yitzchak looking at? What does he see? Yitzchak is looking at the sky. Avraham can't see this. Only Yitzchak can see it. Avraham is looking down at Yitzchak. And Avraham is looking up at the sky, and he sees the heavens open. V'ra'u malachei hasharet. And the malachim can see what's happening. V'ayu bochim, and they start to cry. V'yardu dim'otehim. Their tears fell. V'naflu aleinav, and they fell into Yitzchak's eyes. They begin to cry into Yitzchak's eyes. V'fikach kahu einav. That's why when Yitzchak was old, his eyes dimmed. Because his eyes were damaged. It's a sweet little story, right? Kids want to know why Yitzchak had dimmer eyes than anyone else, right? The answer is because angels cried into his eyes. What's the Midrash really saying? I assume it's not giving us some sort of optical explanation for why Yitzchak had bad eyes. Yeah? Yeah, those tears scalded his eyes. So that the last thing Yitzchak ever saw with absolute clarity was his father poised above him, ready with the knife. That's the last thing Yitzchak ever saw. Then the angels cried in his eyes, and his eyes were scalded. From that point on, everything is dim. Everything is dim. I don't mean that Yitzchak didn't see again clearly in his life, actually physically. What I mean is that that was the signal, flashing moment of lightning clear clarity for Yitzchak. And he saw everything. That was the lens through which, that was the prism through which Yitzchak really saw the rest of his life. And after that, the other experiences did not have the same impact. So I think it's awe-inspiring. I'm very inspired by it. In other words, when I think about the Yitzchak who's able to sacrifice himself for something which is truly important, it's almost the anti-Western individual. The Western individual is all about actualizing myself and my own uniqueness and my own potential and all that sort of stuff. And there are different ways to say it. You could either say Yitzchak sees that actualizing his own potential means subsuming his own potential under that of his father's mission, or he sees that that's actually not what it's cracked up to be. In fact, what I'm supposed to do is take the significant accomplishments of my father and make sure that those wells don't simply fill with dirt and disappear, because that's what happens when you don't have Yitzchak to follow after you and to rename the wells by the same names. If there's no follower, then the great accomplishments of an Avraham simply disappear. What I want to add, and I know we're out of time, is some stuff about Yitzchak finding his own way, because there are things about Yitzchak which are unique. Meaning, having said all this about sacrificing himself to his father and being in his father's shadow, there are impressive things about Yitzchak that are different. First of all, in Bereishit Perek Kaf Daled, it says, "V'Yitzchak ba mibo be'er l'chai ro'i v'hu yoshev be'er t'negev." When Rivka comes home for the first time, brought home by Avraham's servant, supposedly by Eliezer. So where is Yitzchak? Yitzchak is not home. Yitzchak is coming home from meditating out in the fields. Yitzchak is off by himself doing mysterious meditation. There is a deep dimension to him that we do not see with Avraham. We don't see Avraham going off to meditate. We barely see Avraham davening. But Yitzchak is a davener. Yitzchak is a meditator. Yitzchak is out in the fields thinking and meditating. If you look in the last page where it says Bereishit Perek Kaf Hey, Be'elah toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham oled et Yitzchak, Vayehi Yitzchak ben Avraham shana b'kachto, Kivka bat Petuel ha'armi mipadan Avraham, Achot lavan ha'armi lo l'isha. Yitzchak is 40 when he married Yitzchak. Vayetzar Yitzchak v'Hashem l'nochach ishto. He davened to Hashem for his wife. Ki akarahi, for she was childless. Vayetzar lo Hashem, and Hashem responded to him, Atar Rivka ishto. So I always like to point out, How long did it take him until Hashem? It sounds like it's instantaneous. He davens for him and Rivka to have children, and Hashem listens, and that's it. Vaye atar, vaye atar. Right? It's in the same pasuk. How long does it actually take? He gets married at 40, right? So when does he have children with Rivka? Torah says afterwards that they have children when Yitzchak is 60. So that vaye atar, that one word, kept at it for 20 years. 20 years. Sometimes I have students come to me and they're all frustrated because they've been davening so hard for something and Hashem hasn't granted it yet. So I don't throw Yitzchak in their face because Yitzchak was Yitzchak. But I always remind myself of that. He didn't give up. This is a man who never, ever gave up. He wasn't confrontational. Sometimes when you say someone doesn't give up, they're like in your face and they're like bothering you and like oppressing you and whatever it is, you know, like storming the gates of heaven. Yitzchak doesn't storm the gates of heaven, but he quietly just keeps davening and never gives up. Unlike his father. His father is never recorded as having davened to Hashem for children. He never davens. Now maybe he did, and the Torah doesn't tell us so, but it is interesting that the Torah tells us that Yitzchak davens and never tells us that Abraham davens. Not only that, but like someone pointed out before, Abraham and Sarah solved the problem of childlessness in a different way. After 10 years of being in Eretz Canaan, Sarah comes to Abraham and says, we're going to do a surrogate kind of thing. So Yitzchak and Rivka, for whatever reason, did not go that route. So there's an important difference between Abraham and Yitzchak. And I can't wait to meet them, because I suspect that Abraham was a more Olam Hazeh kind of person. He could launch into battle and save his nephew from foes stronger than he. But I think Yitzchak was a more spiritually powerful person. Maybe Abraham had more outward courage, but Yitzchak was a better governor. That's my guess. Look at Bereshit Perek Chavav, and this, with this we'll stop. Vayizra Yitzchak ba'aretz ahi, vayimtza ba'shana ahi me'ash arim, vayivarchehu Hashem. Yitzchak plants, and he gets a hundredfold harvest. A hundredfold. That's where the words Me'ash Arim are from. The neighborhood Me'ash Arim. It's from here. And Hashem blesses him. Vayigdal ha'ish vayelach haloch v'gadel. The man became great, and became greater and greater. Ad ki gadal ma'og. Until he was very great. Abraham is not the same kind of self-made man. Abraham gets his fortune from Paro, from others. The king of Sodom tries to enrich him. But Yitzchak is a self-made man. Abraham is never described as planting, really. A tree here and there, Vayita Eshel. But Yitzchak is a planter. Abraham is a shepherd, but Yitzchak is a shepherd and a planter. And that is something different. Let's talk for a second about wells. It says here that he redigs the wells of his father and calls them by the same names. And then they do something else. But Pasuk Tet Zayin, Vayomer Avimelech al Yitzchak, Leich Me'imanu. Avimelech says to Yitzchak, you know what, you have to leave. Why do you have to leave? At first he had invited Yitzchak to stay and enjoy the land, and now that Yitzchak has become too great, so you got to get out of here. Your flocks are eating everything, and we're all jealous of you, whatever it is, you got to go. So Yitzchak is not confrontational, unlike his father, so he goes. So he settles in the next town over, Nachal Gerar. Then he digs again the wells of Abraham. Great. But that's not the end of the story. Pasuk Yutet. Vayachperu avdei Yitzchak banachal, vayimtzu sham be'er mayim chayim. They find a new well. Yitzchak's servants keep digging, and they find a new well. Vayarivu ro'ei grar im ro'ei Yitzchak lemor lanu hamayim. So Avimelech is pushing him back even further. Avimelech's shepherds are saying, that's not your well, that's our well. They're stealing the well from Yitzchak's servants. Vayikrashem ha'be'er esek ki yitasku imo. So he names it a new name. The name is fighting, right? Asik, because they fought with him. Yitzchak doesn't give up. He moves back another mile, and he digs another well. And they fought over that too. And he calls the name of that one hatred. And he moves back another mile and digs another well. And you get the sense that that's who Yitzchak is. He's not going to fight over the well, because he's not confrontational. Unlike his father, Abraham, so he's not going to launch into war with his 318 commandos and beat the other guys up at night. he's going to move back and dig. And he'll never stop. He'll never stop. Yitzchak to me represents the Jews of all the generations. The Jews of all the generations are generally not confrontational Jews. They're weak. They have the lower hand. But they never, ever, ever give up. They just move back and keep digging another well. Knock down this yeshiva, build another yeshiva. Destroy that mikveh, we make another mikveh. Burn that shul, we just make another shul. Pogrom this town, we just move to another town. Expel us from this country, we go to another country. It hurts. But we just move back and dig again. I think that's the koach of Yitzchak. It's a very different kind of koach. It's much more subtle. But in a sense, it gives us the koach to keep going, even when we can't have victories like Abraham's victory. The Six-Day War is an Abraham Avinu kind of victory. You know, we take our few commandos and we face forces who are much more powerful than we are, and with our better strategy and training and daring, we outmaneuver them and in lightning maneuvers destroy their air force on the ground. Yitzhak, however, is the stick-to-itiveness that made it sure that we got to 1948 and 1967. What got us through the 20 centuries of powerlessness, the 20 centuries of people stomping on us? I think that the answer is Yitzhak. He's the man who's going to back up, dig another well, and never, ever, never, ever give up. They dig another well. Finally, they dig another well, and over that one, they do not fight. He calls that one Rechavot. Now Hashem has given us space, and we have been fruitful. We have been fruitful in the land. So when I think about Yitzchak, I think of a different kind of personality, a softer, subtler kind of personality. But it would be a mistake to think that because he's softer and subtler, that he's any less determined, perhaps more so. And that I think is Yitzchak. And that's what I have in mind when I say, Elokei Abraham, Elokei Yitzchak. It's not the same as Abraham's God. It's a different one. But it's just as heroic, I think, and perhaps more so, and perhaps far more persistent, and far more, I'm just thinking of all those generations of Jews. Like, we think of Jews nowadays, I mean, when you think of the IDF, and you feel such a surge of pride. Worry, of course, for the safety of soldiers, but pride that we're able to defend ourselves nowadays. What about all those times when we weren't? What kept us going, you know, in all those generations when we said, V'techazena enyinu b'shivacha v'tzion b'rachamim, that Hashem should return to Tzion b'rachamim? What enabled us not to lose hope? For 20 centuries. The same thing that enabled Yitzchak to not lose hope, davening for a child, for 20 years. And he made it look easy. V'yatar Yitzchak v'Hashem l'nelchach yishto, v'yatar lo Hashem. We only realized that it took 20 years when the Torah reports the ages. And when you look back at Jewish history, I don't know, maybe to you and me it looks easy. 20 centuries passed in the blink of an eye for you and me, and here we are eating the fruits of all that Yitzchak labor. And I think ultimately that's what Yitzchak passes down to us.
Thank you.